Les colloques du Collège de France.
Thank you so much, Sébastien. First of all, I would like to congratulate you because it is well deserved that you get this chair of the Collège de France, which is a very prestigious chair. I followed what you did in the field of the nanomedicine now since not a too long time, but a long time already. the first time we met in Arcachon for this very interesting meeting that you organized with your colleagues of the University of Bordeaux. So I have, after us, followed your career. We had a lot of very funny things together, including in Japan with Kazunori. And so I am very, very happy to be here. Thank you very much for the invitation to deliver this talk on advanced nanomedicine for the treatment of severe disease. And during this presentation, as you can see here, I would like to discuss with you three advanced nanotechnologies that we have developed in my group for the delivery of drugs. The first one are the first biodegradable nanoparticles for human use, the polyalkyl cyanoacrylate nanoparticles. The second I would like to discuss is the so-called squalenolation technology based on the squalene prodrug approach concept. And finally, I would like also to discuss with you one of the first nanotheranostic approach using the nanoparticles of metal oxide frameworks. So, as you can see on this cartoon, the polyalkyl cyanoacrylate nanoparticles were obtained, in fact, through the anionic polymerization of the cyanoacrylic monomer in a water medium. And you know, at that time, the cyanoacrylic monomer was used as a biodegradable glue in surgery. And from a chemical point of view, and also a pharmaceutical point of view, it was very interesting because it is possible to induce the polymerization process in a pure water medium without using any organic solvent, which is, from a pharmaceutical point of view, is of course very important. And you can see that by using a single emulsion polymerization process, it is possible to get those nanoparticles with a size of around 100 nanometers, which were biodegradable. And after intravenous administration, as you can see here, because of the so-called opsonization process, those nanoparticles will concentrate immediately into the liver tissue. You can see here very clearly the two lobes of the liver after intravenous administration. And for that reason, we had the idea to use those small shuttles to treat the multidrug-resistant hepatocellular carcinoma, because it is a major medical challenge, as you know. And the problem is that at the level of the cancer cells, as you can see here, you have the hyperexpression of efflux proteins, which are PGP, MRP. There are other families of efflux proteins. It is a way that the cancer cells is using to fight against the chemotherapy, because those efflux proteins will induce the export of the anti-cancer compounds from inside of the cell to outside of the cell. And you have a typical experiment here showing you that we have in fact incubated in vitro a human hepatocellular carcinoma arising from patients. And we have incubated with those cells the doxorubicin as a free drug. And you can see here that 100% of the cells survive to the chemotherapy because of this multidrug resistance phenotype. And so the idea we had was to encapsulate the doxorubicin, which is, as you know, a major anti-cancer compound, into those biodegradable nanoparticles to mask these anti-cancer compounds from the recognition by the P-glycoprotein. And it is working well in vitro, because you can see now that if you are incubating increasing concentration of doxorubicin, but this time as nanoparticles, you will restore the sensitivity of the cancer cells towards the chemotherapy. But that was in vitro, and of course we have to move afterwards in vivo. We used different rodents model, and in general, we observed after the treatment with those with this nanomedicine a very important increase of the survival of the animals, including in a model of hepatocarcinoma in a transgenic mice. You can see here very clearly that after the treatment with the doxorubicin polyalkyl cyanoacrylate nanoparticles, we had a huge increase of the apoptosis of the cancer cells comparatively to what happens after the administration of the doxorubicin as a free drug, where you can see that the apoptosis is almost the same than a single solution of glucose 5%. And in fact, those preclinical studies allowed us to create a startup company, which is called BioAlliance, and which entered the stock market in 2005 with around 60 employees. And of course, the goal was to test this nanomedicine into the clinic until the end of the last phase, the phase 3. And the name of this specialty is the LivaTAC. And you can see here, in fact, the results of the second phase clinical trial, where in continued line, you can see that the survival of the patients treated with the LivaTAC nanomedicine was significantly increased comparatively in broken line to the patients which were treated with the standard treatment. At that time, the standard treatment was the chemoembolization of the artery of the tumor. And you can see that by magnetic resonance imaging, we observed also a very important necrosis of the tumor after the treatment with the nanomedicine. And this allowed us to start with a phase 3 clinical trial, which was a multicentric clinical assay in over 40 hospitals in Asia, in Europe, in USA also. And in fact, very rapidly, this was a good news, the LivaTAC received the so-called fast track status from the FDA. This means we could accelerate the phase 3 clinical trial. But unfortunately, because we were a startup company, this is probably a mistake that we did at that time, the phase 3 lasted around 7 years, which was very long. And in the meantime, the consensus treatment has changed from the chemoembolization to finally multi-therapy. And in fact, at the end, as you can see here, and we published that, the LivaTAC tend to show a similar curve than the control arm. And this means that from a pharmaceutical and clinical point of view, those nanoparticles came too late and missed the opportunity to become the best in the class for this indication. And you know that if you are not the best in the class, you cannot put a medicine on the market. Well, but then after we have tried to still improve the technology for a more academic point of view, and to do that, as you can see here, we have functionalized those biodegradable nanoparticles with a small molecule, the biotin. Why? By click chemistry. Why? Just because you know that at the level of a lot of cancer cells, you have the hyperexpression of the biotin receptor. And in fact, we have labeled those nanoparticles with a fluorescent dye, a red fluorescent dye, rhodamine, to be able to follow the trafficking of those nanoparticles intracellularly. And as you can see here, we have labeled the cancer cells. In this case, those were the MCF7 breast cancer. We have labeled the cancer cells with a green fluorescence, with monoclonal antibodies. And you can see that after incubation of the polyalkyl cyanoacrylate biotinylated, the color of the cells changed from green to red, showing that we had indeed a specific targeting of the cancer cells. And this is due to the biotin, because if you are using exactly the same nanoparticles which are just pegylated but without biotin, you can see that in fact the cancer cells remain absolutely green. During all this experience concerning the development of those biodegradable nanoparticles, we realized that there was a very important limitation to this technology, and this limitation was a poor drug loading. And in fact, it is a general trend that the encapsulation into nanocarriers, into classical nanocarriers, including typically liposomes, polymer nanoparticles, results from physical encapsulation processes. This means encapsulation, entrapment, adsorption at the surface of the nanoparticles. And this has, in fact, three important limitations. The first one, as I told you, is a poor drug loading. This means only a few percent of the drug in weight if you are comparing to the weight of the transporter material, 1 or 2%. Also, you generally, after intravenous administration, you have an uncontrolled burst release of the drug, which is due, in fact, to this fraction of the drug, which is rather adsorbed at the surface of the nanomedicine than really encapsulated into its core. And the third limitation is that the drug release is generally not restricted to the diseased cells or tissue when you are using a physical encapsulation process. And this is for that reason that we decided to move from the physical to the chemical encapsulation paradigm, in other words, to do chemistry instead of physics. And to do that, we have used the squalene, because squalene, as you know, is a natural and biocompatible lipid. And very interestingly, this lipid adopts in water a molecular folded conformation, as you can see here in this cartoon. And in fact, we have taken advantage of this compact conformation of the squalene into water to link to this squalene here in red several drugs, which are useful for the treatment of several diseases, as we will see, by using a biocleavable linker. And by supramolecular chemistry, we observe that those prodrugs, those bioconjugates, spontaneously self-assemble as nanoparticles with a size of around in between 70 and 100 nanometers. And with a much higher drug loading than after performing the encapsulation by using physical processes. Why? Just because, as you can see here, each molecule of squalene used as a transporter material is able to transport at least one molecule of the drug, even more if possible. Also, you have an absence of burst release just because you have a chemical link between the drug and the squalene. And if you are a good chemist, you can design a biocleavable linker which will be sensitive to a specific endogenous stimulus, allowing the drug liberation, the drug release of the encapsulated drug into the diseased cells. And this was really, as you can see here, a platform, the so-called squalenolation platform, which was versatile and flexible because we applied this concept for the targeting of several anti-cancer compounds. I will speak about that, including doxorubicin, gemcitabine, cisplatin, and other anti-cancer compounds with a drug loading which is generally over 40%. Also, there are a lot of applications in the field of the neuroscience. I will not speak about the stroke, but by linking adenosine to this squalene, we could indeed have very interesting results in the field of the treatment of the brain ischemia. But I will show you one example for the treatment of pain, which is also a major medical challenge. Also, you can link some antibiotics or antiviral compounds to the squalene to treat some resistance intracellular infectious disease. And finally, as you can see here, even we have linked this squalene, which is finally a very small molecule, to a small interfering RNA, which is a bigger hydrophilic molecule, and we get nanoparticles in this time with a drug loading which was over 90% because of the high molecular weight, of course, of the nucleic acids. Well, I would like first to show you some applications very rapidly in the field of the cancer therapy. So you can see here that the first molecule that we linked to the squalene was the gemcitabine, which is a major anti-cancer compound. But in fact, this molecule, after intravenous administration, will be very rapidly deaminated in difluorouracil, which is a non-active metabolite of gemcitabine. And so we have protected the amino group of the gemcitabine after linkage with the squalene through the squalenic acid. And after putting this prodrug into water and looking to what happened by cryotransmission electron microscopy, you can see that we observe very clearly columns. This means a supramolecular organization of the stacking of those gemcitabine squalene molecules. And by X-ray diffraction at small angle scattering, we observe that in fact those molecules formed an inverted hexagonal face, which was absolutely confirmed by molecular modeling. And of course, then after we started with some preclinical assays in different cancer model in rodents. Just one example here with the grafted P388 leukemia. We injected the cancer cell subcutaneously, and you can see that after the treatment with gemcitabine, there was no decrease of the size of the tumor because this tumor is resistant to gemcitabine. And you can see that after administration of the gemcitabine squalene nanoparticles, the tumor had completely disappeared. And just to show you that it is a very, I would say, generic and flexible platform, we have linked once again the doxorubicin to the squalene, and we have observed amazingly that in that case we got nanoparticles but with an elongated shape. And after intravenous administration to rodents here in green, you can see that we increased the blood concentration of the doxorubicin squalene prodrug comparatively to what happens after the administration here in red of the doxorubicin as a free drug, which is very rapidly cleared from the blood circulation. And by the way, we completely change the biodistribution of the doxorubicin, because after the administration of the doxorubicin as a squalene doxorubicin nanoparticles, we decrease dramatically the concentration of these anti-cancer compounds into the cardiac tissue. And you know that in the clinic, the cardiac toxicity of the doxorubicin is the limiting toxicity of these anti-cancer compounds. And by the way, 24 hours after the intravenous administration, well, you can see that we increased importantly the concentration of the drug into the grafted tumor. And the result of that was that you could increase the anti-cancer pharmacological activity, as shown here in a human pancreatic MIA-PaCa model and also in a murine lung cancer model. You can see in red that after administration of the doxorubicin as a free drug, there was no significant decrease of the size of the tumor. But after administration of the doxorubicin squalene nanoparticles here in green, you can see that we completely stopped the tumor growth. We had a very strong tumor growth inhibition. But you know, in oncology, if you have a compound which is very active but very toxic, you have no gain in terms of what is called the therapeutic index. For that reason, we investigated the cardiac toxicity on a rat hypertensive model. And the protocol is that we administer doxorubicin once a week during 11 weeks at a dose of 1 milligram per kilo body weight. And to show you the toxicity of these compounds, if you are following the troponin level into the serum after treatment of the doxorubicin 3, you can see that we had a huge increase of the troponin level, which is a strong marker of the cardiac toxicity. And at the end of the experiment, for those rats who survived to the cardiac toxicity of doxorubicin, we took some biopsies, and you can see that we observed a very strong vacuolization of the cardiomyocytes. And then we repeated the experiment with the doxorubicin squalene nanoparticles at the same dose equivalent doxorubicin, but also at the double and the triple of the dose. And you can see that in this case, the troponin level were absolutely normal, like healthy rats. And also after taking some biopsies, you can see that the histology of the cardiac tissue was absolutely normal. And so by decreasing the toxicity, you can also increase the dose that you will administer, and you increase also by the same way the therapeutic index. Now the question you will ask me, how are those nanoparticles which are not functionalized by specific ligands able to recognize the cancer cells? And in fact, we investigated that, and we investigated in fact the interaction of gemcitabine squalene, doxorubicin squalene, cisplatin squalene with the blood after intravenous administration to rodents, but also with human blood arising from patients in vitro. And we observed very surprisingly that after intravenous administration, well, those nanoparticles disaggregated very rapidly, releasing in fact the anti-cancer squalene prodrug as single molecular entities. And in fact, you know here in blue that the squalene is the precursor of the biosynthesis of the cholesterol. And for that reason, due to the squalene moiety, this prodrug has a very strong interaction with the cholesterol-rich lipoprotein. This means that into humans, this prodrug will insert into the LDL and use indirectly the LDL to target the cancer cells. Why? Because at the level of the cancer cells, you have the hyperexpression of the LDL receptors just because the cancer cells need to feed with lipids to make membrane and to multiplicate. And this was the concept of the indirect targeting using endogenous particles, either HDL into the rodents or LDL into the humans. Now, I would like to move to another application, which is indirectly linked with cancer. It is the treatment of pain. Why? Because you know that the treatment of pain is a major medical challenge, because in fact the use of morphine and opioid derivatives induce always tolerance, dependence, and addiction. And you know that it is a major problem in the US, but also a problem, of course, with treatment with a tramadol in Europe. And a very attractive option, as you can see here, is the use of neuropeptides like endorphin or enkephalin, which are synthesized by the neurons when you are making sport, for instance. And in fact, the problem is that those endorphin or enkephalin, they have the advantage not to induce tolerance and addiction, because they are interacting with the delta opioid receptors, whereas the morphine and the opioid derivatives are interacting with the mu receptors. But the problem of those neuropeptides is that after intravenous administration, they are very rapidly metabolized with a half-life of only a few minutes. And to overcome this problem, as you can see here in this chemistry, we have linked the squalene with the leukephalin by using different biocleavable linkers, the oxycarbonyl, the glycolic amide, and this results in nanoparticles with a size in between 70 and 100 nanometers. And we have tested those nanoparticles for pain alleviation in a model of inflammatory pain in the rat that we induced by the injection of carrageenan in the right paw of the rats, inducing, as you can see here, a swelling of the paw with a very strong painful sensitivity. And you can see in blue that after administration of those leukencephalin squalene nanoparticles, we obtained a long-lasting pain alleviation, which was absolutely not obtained in black after the administration of the neuropeptide as a free drug. And in fact, more recently, in collaboration with my colleague and friend Philippe Sidbon, who is a clinician anesthesiologist at the Institut Gustave Roussy, we have tested those nanoparticles in another model, which is a post-operative model. And you can see very clearly here in red that we obtained a long-lasting pain alleviation. In that case, the model is an incised paw. And if you are using an osmotic pump, you have really a long-lasting pain alleviation, which is, of course, a very big advantage after a surgery. Now, the question is, how are those nanoparticles able to target the inflammatory, painful area? In fact, to do that, we labeled those nanoparticles with a fluorescent dye, and we did some imaging. And you can see that over the time here, those leukencephalin squalene nanoparticles concentrated into the right inflammatory paw. You can see that here on this magnification. And we used the left guilty paw as a control. And there was no access for those nanoparticles. And in fact, as you can see here, this is explainable because at the level of the inflammatory tissue, because of the arrival of macrophages, the liberation of a lot of cytokines, you have a leaky vasculature, so that after intravenous administration, the leukencephalin squalene nanoparticles will extravasate in a highly specific manner in the inflamed, painful area, allowing the release of the intact neuropeptides able to interact with the, not the central, but the peripheral opioid receptors. And this explains the pain alleviation that we obtained. But if you are doing a whole body biodistribution, you can see that those nanoparticles have no access to the brain. And for that reason, we obtained a pain alleviation, but without addiction, contrary to morphine and the other opioid derivatives which are passing through the blood-brain barrier. Now, I would like to close my presentation by showing you that it is also possible to develop what we called a nanotheranostic concept that we have developed in collaboration with Christian Serre and Gérard Ferré. You know that Gérard Ferré and Christian Serre have developed some metal oxide frameworks, and we have used those metal oxide frameworks to develop, to design nanoparticles and to encapsulate drugs. And this is a very interesting material because you can see that the metal oxide frameworks are characterized by iron oxide clusters, which are complexed with diacids, and depending, of course, on the length and the flexibility of the diacids, you can design pores which are perfectly adapted to the molecule you would like to encapsulate. But what is very interesting with this into those nanoparticles of metal oxide frameworks is that because of the iron oxide clusters, you have a decrease of the T2 signal at magnetic resonance imaging. This means that you can make imaging to look where the nanoparticles are going into the body, to see if the tumor is collapsing, decreasing, or growing, and so you can do also a diagnostic. And this is a concept of the nanotheranostic because you are combining a therapeutic functionality because you are encapsulating a drug, I will show you, with a diagnostic functionality because you can perform some advanced imaging. Now, a couple of years after that, we have observed that those nanomorphs were reversibly pH sensitive. Because, in fact, as you can see here, at an acidic pH, the nanoparticles have a size of around 100 nanometers. But as soon as they are put in a neutral pH, you can see, for instance, in serum, you can see that those nanoparticles will form some microaggregates. But those microaggregates will disaggregate very rapidly. And so after intravenous administration of those nanomorphs, we observe that here in blue, they concentrated into the lung tissue, but without inflammatory process that we tested because those microaggregates disaggregated very rapidly, as you can see here, releasing the individual nanoparticles with their anti-cancer drug payloads. And so we encapsulated gemcitabine monophosphate into those nanomorphs. And you can see that this allowed to target the anti-cancer compounds here in blue into the lung tissue, which was not the case after the administration of the drug-free. And we used a Lewis lung carcinoma, which is a typical cancer model, which is inducing pulmonary metastasis. And you can see that with those nanomorphs loaded with the gemcitabine, we could decrease the number of pulmonary metastases, which was not the case after the administration of the free drug. So I come to my conclusion. I hope that I have convinced you that, in fact, some advanced nanotechnologies, but there are, of course, other examples, can protect the drug from the fast metabolization. The typical example are, for instance, neuropeptides, or I didn't speak about that, but also small interfering RNA, that you can design nanoparticles for a specific recognition of the diseased area, for instance, using the squalene for an indirect recognition process or by functionalizing the particles with a specific ligand. And finally, with a nanomorph, we can combine various functionality, therapy, and imaging and see if you continue to treat the patients depending on the imaging or not. And I would like to acknowledge, of course, all the people of my group who collaborated more or less to one or another example I have given to you. And special thanks also to ERC, which is, I have seen that in the preceding slides, also a fantastic experience because this allows you to be completely independent, to choose your collaboration. And this has allowed me to develop this squalenolation technology. Thank you very much.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.